Morning, fellas.
Hey Chris, how you doing?
Very good, very good. Was that Kent?
Yes, that's right.
Hey, Kent, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Excellent. Welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday night call. I'm sure a few stragglers will come on in. Currently, we've had the power go out three times in my neighborhood due to a nice thunderstorm. But I see some blue skies, so I think we're in the clear moving forward. But if at any point I freeze and I'm gone, just sign out, sign back in, just wait, then she'll get back on. But if that doesn't happen, we are good for this hour-long call Wednesday night. I always like starting off our Wednesday calls with shares of some wins. It's good to be in groups of men where we can actually celebrate each other. I don't know what all your group friend chats are like, but if I were to die tomorrow, please make sure that my group chat gets buried with me, because we do not bring each other up. However, I feel like this is a good place we could do that. So let's share some wins. Everyone doesn't mind sharing some wins. You can type it or you can unmute yourself. I haven't seen these faces in the last month for most of you. So who's got a win to share?
I got to eat food again, which was nice. Sort of finished a body composition phase, and we went into a real hard calorie deficit for the last few weeks to get some photos done, and kind of did like a cut, and then muck around with the hydration for the last few days, and then I had one big carb smash day before photos, and went like 10x the carbs I'd been eating. So I
Yeah.
just smashed a big plate of pasta, and I was in a happy place for a day.
Awesome. And how'd the body fill out and feel afterwards?
It was crazy. I've never done that. So Andrew described it as a, the party trick. And a pure aesthetic at that stage. The hard work's been done over like 8, 9 months, but it was kind of cool just to muck around and tweak that little bit. Like the vascularity suddenly popped, and I, the day we took some final photos of the body composition phase, and I was like, holy shit, I've never seen my body like that before.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's cool. You can just manipulate the physiology to get that type of result or that change. That's good. It's also good for you to see what your body's capable of when you put a bunch of effort into it for a long duration and then do those things. It's also good to be aware that sometimes we may see things that we may want from a body aesthetics perspective, and then realize that maybe if you see someone's body in a photo or on a video, they may have done the same thing. They may have depleted their body for 12 to 16 weeks and then did a big carb load or salt load, and their body looks different for that 24-hour period. Sometimes it ain't always as it seems. So that's good, Rob. Who else has a win to share? Anyone? With a wind, I just heard my cat just go crazy around the corner, but I don't hear any screaming, so I think everything's fine. Sorry, I blacked out for a split second. Anyone else have a win here? Paul, you unmuted yourself.
I've reached the most recent weight goal for the last check-in, up to 155. Most recent weight goal. Can learn how to talk.
Okay, so you hit a weight goal.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
Congratulations. How long were you working towards that?
Think 3 months for this one.
3 months. Okay. Was it hard? Was it easy? Was it medium?
Easier than the previous ones, because I actually have the caloric intake more hammered out at this point, so it's easier to just keep on gaining the weight.
Okay, that's good to hear. Yeah, sometimes you have to go through it a few times so you figure stuff out. And that actually leads well into our topic of the day. Now we're going to be talking about putting on muscle and then how to sustain it. So I'll kind of preemptively explain my positioning on this one here, and then how I'm going to apply some of the scientific approaches and why things work versus how things don't. So if you've been on call with me before, I've talked a little bit about my journey with body composition. From a weight athlete, I've been as little as 67 and a half kilos. That's 148 pounds. That's a full grown woman. And I've been as heavy as a 93 kilo weight class, but I only got up to 199.6 pounds. That is almost non-victim weight. 200 and above, you're pretty good, but if you're below, you're still victim weight. So I've gone through that different, light, medium, medium husky Chris, heavy Chris, whatever my wife calls me. I've got three different suits for different sizes. At different points in my life, I had to be different weights for different purposes. So I've played the game of gaining weight, of losing weight, of eating a lot, of eating a little bit. And I can tell you that there's work involved with doing that. So we're going to talk a little bit about how to put on muscle, nutritional snippets and components that are necessary, and to kind of make it maintain long term. But just quickly, there's only a few of us on the call here. Just type in the chat box right now, what is your current goal with muscle intelligence? Is it muscle gain? Is it strength? Is it fat loss? Is it maintaining your weight? Okay, so Kent wants to gain some muscle. Okay, that's good. Paul, you just hit a goal. Do you have another goal now?
Yep, moved up 5 pounds. So it'd be muscle gain for me too.
Okay, so gain muscle, that's good. Hypertrophy with a lean gain. Okay, that's good. And then Jeff, your current goal? Strength, minimize pain, keep reasonable, healthy body fat. Jeff wants to put on muscle too. Kind of the same thing. Get strong, put on muscle, still have healthy body composition. Okay, so that's great. So we're all going to be aligned by doing the same thing to do that. Every time that you exercise, that is a stimulus on the body. When you create that stimulus on the body, that stimulus is going to be either build or break down and lose. What comes next determines if you're going to build or continually breaking down and losing. Do you think it's possible to gain muscle with just nutrition? What do you fellas think?
I'd be surprised without some kind of stimulus on the muscles.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So you are correct. You need to have a certain level of stimulus to cause that muscle to grow. Now there's ways around it. There's a cool study done about 2023. And what they did was they had a placebo group and then they had another group. They put them both on anabolics. And one of the group with the placebo wasn't really on anabolics. And they said no exercise. I think it was a 6 week program. And then the other group, again, with anabolics, no exercise. And they just retested their body composition at the end. They did skin fold measurements, they did muscle mass or lean muscle mass, they did weight on the scale. And the group that took the anabolics and did no exercise increased lean muscle mass, small amount, I think it was like 6% or something, 4 to 6%. And then the other group with no exercise actually lost a little bit of muscle mass because some of them were probably doing recreational exercise anyway. So there was no intervention with food. Yeah, she's coming in. So there's no intervention with food. It was just that. So you can grow muscle with some form of signal to do that. An anabolic creates a signal. If you are not using an anabolic, the only other way to get that signal is with the stimulus of exercise or puberty. So if anyone's on this call and you haven't hit it yet, your time will come eventually. But puberty will also increase muscle mass on people. That's why you can take children in parts of the world where maybe their nutrition is not as easily accessible as it is in North America. They may be living in poverty, but yet they still grow. They still get big and they still grow this way. They still be bigger than mom and dad when they're eating very poor food or no food at all. That's because they are having the stimulus of growth coming from hormones, which is like anabolics. For the rest of us, Joes, we need the stimulus. That stimulus is resistance training. Now, there's degrees of resistance training. and there's degrees of different stimuluses. So one stimulus that would cause a muscle to grow is it's got to be something that creates a hypertrophic effect. A hypertrophic or a sarcoplasmic effect is muscular swelling. So the muscle has to get some form of stimulus to get into a swell-like state. What are some things you think you could do to get a muscle into a swell-like state? There's a lot of different answers here. What could you do?
You mean in terms of sort of contract the muscle or
Yeah, Robert, when you work out, how do you get a pump?
blood flow? So I lift, get blood to it,
Yeah.
reps, stretch. Contract the muscle, relax the muscle.
Yeah, contract, relax, contract,
Up and
relax.
down.
And how are you thinking you get a pump? How else can you get a pump?
Volume.
Volume. Yeah.
Yeah.
You do more. Calculate that volume and do more. Put a bunch of volume into the muscle. Isolate the muscle. If you want to grow a muscle on the body, make sure that muscle is doing the majority of the work. Those stimuluses can lead to a muscular pump. Some people can get a pump easier than other people, and that may be because they have a mind-muscle connection. So all of us in here can do a bunch of cable chest flies. Some of us might just have a better connectile ability of getting the pec to contract than others. Doesn't mean it can't be learned, but when we're looking at video as from a coach perspective, if I see a video of someone doing chest flies, and I see them doing chest flies like this versus someone doing chest flies like this, I know right away momentum is doing it for one person, the muscle is doing it for the other person. Both have done 3 sets of 10 of the same exercise, but one of them used their pecs more than the other. So the execution of the exercise can lead to muscular swelling dramatically. The second thing that could lead to muscular swelling causing a hypertrophic effect is can you actually do it with just the muscle and then accumulate a bunch of blood flow in that area to get that pump under fatigue too? So what can happen sometimes is fatigue kicks in and then the body's going to try to make an exercise easier. To make an exercise easier, it's going to phone a friend. So the pec fly is another good alternative or good example. When the pecs get tired, who do they call on? The biceps. The elbows bend, the bicep contracts more. So all of a sudden, the bicep takes over more of the pec. Possibly the traps take over a bit of the fly. So all of a sudden, the body is now using secondary muscles to finish the movement. If you can stay using the same muscle, you can get more fatigue in that area. Other techniques that we can use, drop sets. Forced rep sets, strip sets, doing more volume, adding an additional set, partial repetitions. So, to make sure we're all familiar with all this stuff here, a drop set would be going to your rep range, reducing the weight, and then doing more sets, more reps. So, it could be like your coach could write chest fly, 4 sets of 8 to 10 with 4 drop sets. And they could give you a guideline of the drop sets being additional 6 to 8 reps. So you could have 17.5 pounds on the cable fly. You get your 8 reps. Then all of a sudden you drop the weight or strip the weight down. Go again, strip the weight down. Go again, strip the weight down. Go again. So you end up doing one set of like 30 plus reps. That's going to create a whole bunch of muscular fatigue and a big pump in the area. That is a great stimulus for hypertrophy, for growth. You can measure the amount you're doing by just timesing your weight times reps times sets, and that is your calculation of volume. If you continually do that week after week after week, and you're growing, the juice, or sorry, the it ain't broke, you don't fix it, you kind of keep doing that. And then once you plateau and you're not getting any more growth, then you would need to maybe increase your volume. So the volume increase is usually best done once your body's maxed out what it currently can do already in that scenario. So when we exercise, a stimulus has to cause fatigue, and we have to get a pump in the tissue. That's one of the things that's necessary for growth. If you do that, then you add the nutrition to it, the muscle will grow. If you just eat the nutrition that is usually recommended for growth, but you don't create the stimulus, you grow in another way. Who knows how else you grow? You get fat. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You just grow fat. So for some people in our program and just training in general, they say, I go into a calorie surplus and the scale's going up, but I'm just gaining fat. There's no muscle growth at all. The first thing to look at is, are you creating the stimulus for resistance training to cause a growth first? Most of the time, the stimulus isn't there. So it could be how they exercise, or it could even be, are they exercising at all? Are they missing workouts? Sometimes that happens. Jeff and I had a good conversation earlier today. He's got some busy times coming up. And I said to him, I said, okay, you're going to be busy with the food. If we continue to eat a super high caloric intake and the stimulus isn't there, your body's going to store that as fat. So if you're not feeling the same amount of hunger, you don't need to eat as much. However, if you go too low on things like protein, your body can start to atrophy. So if Jeff's taking in 4,500 calories a day, and he's got to miss some workouts because of family trips going on or work-related busyness, he doesn't need the same amount of calories as he would normally have because the stimulus isn't there. But if his protein numbers go too low, the body atrophies at a faster rate. So he can keep the protein numbers high, reduce the carbs and the fats. He won't accumulate body fat, and he'll also maintain more of his muscle mass as well. And a good rule of thumb is to keep the same protein number that you were already using to grow in the first place. And for most of us here, it's probably close to a gram per pound of body weight we are, or a gram per pound of body weight we want to be. So, Paul, if you're 165 and you're like, I want to be 175, your coach probably has you trying to eat about 175 grams a day. So, if you're missing workouts and you don't want to lose any of the muscle mass you've currently gained, you would still have the 175 grams of protein a day, reduce the carbs and the fats, and you can maintain the muscle that you already have. Does that make sense to everyone? So the food has to reach the stimulus to cause the growth. So there's a great example of stimulus that we can use: drop sets, force sets, volume, strip sets, and so forth. Another stimulus that works really good for growth is when you lift something heavy. Now, the reason why when you lift something heavy, it can lead to growth is when you lift something heavy, not just the muscles tend to get stressed, but also connective tissues. Connective tissues can grow as well. So your spine is bone and there's connective tissues in between. If you load your spine enough with barbell work, trap bar work, heavy farmer holds, over time, the density will actually increase. Your bone mineral density will actually go up. So you can see numbers on the scale change just from your bones getting more dense. That is one of the most, if not the most effective way to treat anyone who's been diagnosed with osteoporosis. You have to stimulate the skeleton by holding or lifting, excuse me, something heavy enough, and it'll adapt by actually getting thicker, which will then increase your weight on the scale and get more dense. So heavy lifting can have an effect like that, but it also can have your body increase muscular size because the demand it's on that the body says, okay, if I've got more muscle, I can move this weight a little bit better. So from a powerlifting perspective or a weightlifting perspective, they can still put on muscle without doing bodybuilding work. What is a nice flow? A little bit of both. Lift some things heavy and do a bunch of isolated work as well, and then you can put on a lot of muscle. Great stimulus for growth. So if I've got the stimulus with my training and I've got the nutrition, is it possible we can still not grow? If I train, if coach says 4 days a week, and I train 4 days a week, I got the intensity there, and I need to eat this many calories and this many grams of protein on a daily basis, and I eat all that, is it possible that some people still can't grow muscle?
I'd say yeah, like maybe if recovery and other things weren't there as well, if you weren't sleeping, if you weren't hydrated, if you maybe a few other things.
You're right. At this, your confidence at the start was quite low. Yeah. But as you started talking a bit more, you're hitting some key points here. So recovery being a big one. Recovery falls into multiple camps. Recovery is going to come from the camp of sleep. That's when your body is producing a lot of growth hormone. The most growth hormone your body will produce will be when you're sleeping at night. So when your body's producing growth hormone, that is when your muscles can grow. So if you've got the best training protocol, you got the best supplementation protocol, the best nutrition protocol, and your body is sleeping 5 hours a night, you could be in a situation where you're not growing. So sleep, as I've said this before, if it was a prohibited substance in sport, everyone would sleep 10 hours a night. But because it's not all athletes utilize it as well as they could. LeBron James, eh? Year 23. That guy naps 1 to 2 hours a day. He's figured it out quite well. So he is the longevity of athletes. He surpassed Joey Chestnut. Are we all familiar with the 18-time world champion Joey Chestnut? One of the greatest athletes of all time. He has won 18 world titles in hot dog eating. Joey Chestnut, world record. 10 minutes, 78 dogs with buns. Unfortunately, last year he was not in the Nathan's it's your holiday, American holiday championship because it's a funny thing. He signed a sponsorship deal with like a Beyond Meat or a version of Beyond Meat hot dogs. So the hot dog eating contest was like, no, you can't be sponsored by non-meat hot dogs, so we're not going to let you in. So we didn't go in. Another guy won. He smashed like 58 hot dogs in 10 minutes. But I got good news for you guys. You're probably all wondering. He's back this year. I don't know the details of the sponsorship, but he's back to claim his 19th title in 20 years. So yeah, another athlete who needs to be studied for longevity. But when it comes to recovery, sleeping is a massive component of it. You can't grow if you don't sleep unless you're using anabolics or you're going through puberty. Those are kind of the two caveats that work really good for muscular growth. So we got to sleep. Now, when it comes to recovery, we don't have to look at just sleep as a component of it. Sometimes the stimulus can be too much for the body to recover from. So through our fitness gene genetic testing that we're using a little bit more here with muscle intelligence, there's some snippets of genes where people accumulate more inflammation in their bodies. If they accumulate too much inflammation, your body becomes more catabolic, which means it breaks down. So to counter it, people think, well, if I've got a lot of inflammation in my body, I need to increase my recovery. Yeah, that can work. But what also works is if you find that you're someone who accumulates a lot of inflammation from training, you change the training stress. Most people who accumulate a lot of inflammatory responses from training, they're people that cannot handle the high volume. High volume could be within one session, high volume could be within 1 week. So this could look like someone who does five sets of an exercise muscle group, on average, five sets, and they train 5 days a week. What you could do with someone in that scenario, and you may be thinking, are you talking about me, Chris? Is you could take your training and you cut it down to four times a week or three times a week, keeping the volume within session quite high, or you keep the frequency where it is or reduce the frequency by one and minimize the sets. How do you know? Well, once you've maxed out your stimulus, your nutrition, your sleep, and if you're not growing and you're sore all the time, you're probably someone who accumulates too much inflammation from the volume, and you got to reduce something somewhere. Now, I've dealt with people before who thought that the training stimulus was too much for them to handle. Turns out that the foods that they were eating was too much for them to handle. The foods caused too much inflammation. So they were eating more highly processed foods. Go to Costco, you get chicken chunks. Those are like the deep fried with batter, chicken things, when your coach may have said, you should probably just have a chicken breast. because there's shit in chicken chunks. And then all of a sudden, when you remove the highly processed chicken chunks, you put in real chicken, all of a sudden the inflammatory responses are less and they can grow. So sometimes it's also the types of foods you put in, and then also your body might not be able to handle a lot of volume. But I got good news for you. Everybody can increase their tolerance with enough time. You just got to kind of manipulate and play and test different things. Or you'd give yourself a good run at 2 to 3 weeks in one protocol, 4 days a week instead of five, and then track other metrics. Okay, are you still as sore as you were before? No, I'm not as sore as I was before. Okay, great. Is the scale moving even by 0.1, 0.2, 0.3 hundred grams to a pound? Not sore, scale's moving, and then photos. You always look at the photos and say, okay, I'm looking good. If you carry a lot of inflammation in your body, you see it a lot of times in the face. You get a bit of a puffier face. You get more of a red nose kind of thing as well. The eyes kind of look a little bit bulged out. You can also get like limb swelling, like hands, feet, ankles. Those are all signs too. If you get blood work done regularly, you'd see things like CRP is up high, homocysteine's up high. Those are inflammatory markers. So yeah, some people, they just can't tolerate the volumes. What do we do in that scenario? We reduce the volume, or we can increase the intensity, give them more strength. So our boy Gavin, Coach Gavin here, he can't tolerate a lot of volume. He can tolerate a lot of strength. So when he wants to put on muscle, that's his protocol. More 3 and 4 days a week, even full bodies he does really well with. You give me a full body, like I will lose muscle. I do not put on muscle with full bodies. I need a lot of isolation work for my body type. And that just comes from practice and trial and error, and then some of the genetic testing. I'll put a pause here before I continue on with a few other things here in case anybody wants to open the floor to a few questions regarding what I just chatted about. And if nobody has anything to chat about, we'll just kind of keep going on. Okay, so for growth, we're going to need to be able to recover. That is a component. We need a stimulus. And then it's going to come down to also nutrition. So I mentioned before, generically, the nutrition is a big component when I said about protein. But I'll open the floor to everyone in here. Why do you think nutrition is important for growth? Why couldn't everybody just eat the same foods and still grow? Why do you think that is? Why is food important? Why can't we just have protein shakes?
I think it's the macro and the micronutrients and everything else that it's not just protein. You need the carbs, you need the fats, you need something, you know, everything below that, fiber, you need all the other bits and pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, different bits and pieces of the puzzle have a different effect on the body. So if I want to grow muscle, I need to create a stimulus for growth. There's your resistance training. I need to create some form of fatigue. That's also the resistance training. And then I need to recover. And the sleep is going to be a large component of recovery, but the food is also going to be a large component of recovery. If you could choose what's easier on the body, growing or losing weight is always going to be easier. Sorry to tell you. Unless you've done both, you don't know. If you just tried to lose weight and if you're on a weight loss journey, and I know this group in here, everyone here is not on a weight loss journey, but if someone's listening to the call and you're on a weight loss journey and this is your first time trying it, I understand weight loss is hard. It's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying that when you compare the two, and once you've done weight loss and once you've done muscle growth, the growth is going to be harder. Here's the reason why it's harder. You got to train harder for growth than you do for weight loss. You can lose body fat without going to a gym. You can. You can do 100% of it can be done with weight loss, with nutrition. You cannot grow muscle without going to a gym. You need some form of resistance. So right away, you got to train differently and you got to train harder. So you got to be really sore. And when you're really sore, you then got to eat more food than you think you need to eat. So a general rule of thumb is you take what is known as your BMR, your basal metabolic rate, That is about the amount of calories you need to sustain yourself, and you got to eat a bunch more, putting you in a surplus position. That surplus can vary from person to person, from body type to body type. Ectomorphs are usually hyper lean people with a high metabolic rate. They need a high percent above their BMR, 30%, 35%. That's the ectomorph. A mesomorph, someone who kind of looks at the squat rack and all of a sudden puts on muscle each week, they don't have to go to as extremes of percents above their BMR. They can say 10, 15 and still put on muscle. So unfortunately, you can't change that. That's what, mom and dad gave you. It is what it is. But if you're someone who puts on muscle not easy, you need to eat. You need to eat a lot, and you got to eat when you're not hungry. And I can tell you that's uncomfortable. When I moved up weight classes, I had to change how much time I spent eating each day. So I would have to get up 75 minutes before I had to be at work so I could prep my breakfast, eat my breakfast, and digest my breakfast before I went to work. Because if I tried to eat it too fast, I would be belching, I'd be gassy, and I wouldn't feel good, and I'd have some gnarly shits. So all of a sudden, all this food that was going into my gullet, I'm literally just pooping out. So I said, okay, I'm wasting money now, and I'm not getting the recovery I need from the food for the stimulus. So I have to eat slower and I have to digest my food before I go into the gym and go into work. So I would have to eat slower, give myself 75 minutes to get through my whole breakfast. And then you eat it, you feel a little lethargic, a little bit slow, you go to work, you go to do your thing. And then all of a sudden, timer goes off. Man, I gotta eat again. It's only been 3 hours. I gotta eat again. Okay, I'm gonna eat a little bit more. I'm not hungry. You kind of never get hungry. You're just always eating because it's scheduled. And that can be tough. But the good news is you adapt to it. What happens is your stomach can expand a little bit, because a smooth muscle in your stomach is very pliable, can stretch based on the stimulus being the amount of volume that goes in. So if you diet for a while, people say it's really hard in the beginning. I'm always hungry, and then all of a sudden I just wasn't hungry. I was eating less. The abdomen technically had shrunk because it didn't have to stretch as much. When you put more food in, the volume goes up, it stretches, it adapts to it. Then at the same time, your gut microbiome changes. So what'll happen is your body will actually grow more bacteria that might feed off of such things as more carbohydrates, more sugars, more fats. There's a thing out there called SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And people like that who have bad digestive systems, they have an overgrowth of a bad bacteria that you don't normally want. The way you kill off that bacteria is you starve it. When they look at competitive eaters, and just so you all know, that's a thing, it's a real thing. Competitive eating is a sport, hence Joey Chestnut. When they looked at their gut bacteria, they had unique bacteria that allowed them to consume higher volumes of food. I had my genetic testing done. I wanted to pull this up to you guys here. Deep down inside, I'm a fatso, just so we're all clear on that. If I didn't fall into this fitness world, I would be a 300-pound circus freak, because I have the FTO gene, also known as the fat gene. It's a snippets of an RS bunch of numbers, another RS bunch of numbers. Essentially, what it means that I have a greater appetite. I produce low amounts of leptin. Obesity and overeating is quite simple for me. I always made a joke before this even got tested. With my last name being Fudge, I say we have the fudge gene. We don't get full, we just choose to stop eating. And I've got two sons, and my oldest son, he eats the same way. And I recognized early on, I had to be like, okay, you're done eating. And he's like, well, I'm still hungry. I said, I know. I said, we're gonna be hungry for a while. That's who we are. I said, we have to choose to stop eating sometimes. It turns out when I got some of these genes testing done, it's like, oh yeah, you fall into all these categories of obesity. So when it comes to eating, I can eat. It's not comfortable, but I can still eat a lot of food. Hard gaining, eating lots, and becoming skinny fat. What about hard gainer? So you might have missed this, TK, when we were talking a little bit earlier about the stimulus. The stimulus has to be there. You have to work out to a level of fatigue that when you then put a lot of the food in, your body uses that for muscular growth. So for a hard gainer, my first instinct is we got to train harder. We got to increase the volume. We got to add more drop sets, add more, and train harder. And I remember when you were on the camps, you trained harder. So imagine training like that on a day-to-day basis. You'd be able to eat more food because your body would require more of that. Yeah. My genetic testing did say I'm more likely to be poor at cardio. I can show you guys. There is a here. I'm fine with that. You can tell me some things that I'm gonna be bad at, but I'm not gonna it doesn't doesn't define who I am. Where is it here? I'm just gonna share with you. Okay, so when we look at endurance here, soft tissue injury risk. So I'm at a high risk here. And that makes sense. A lot of times when I do things at my A-type personality, hey, if running 2K is good for you, I'll run 10 kind of thing, right? So soft tissue, high risk. Gene variants like the higher risk of soft tissue injury. So from an endurance perspective, the body just breaks down a little sooner. Yeah, no problem there. I'm fine with that. Resting heart rate and heart rate variability increase genetic risk. I carry a relative higher number of genetic risk variants linked to elevated resting heart rate and lower heart rate variability. When you look at my HRV, I got piss poor scores. Now you compare me to some of you guys here. I may be the coach, but I would say probably more than half of you have higher HRV scores than me. But what do you know what I do with that information? I also know that when my averages go down, there's something I'm doing in my training or my lifestyle that is negatively affecting my recovery. And I can pinpoint the big ones. When I have alcohol, my HRV goes down. When I eat close to bedtime, my HRV goes down. When I train close to bedtime, my HRV goes down from my average scores. So now I have that data. If I don't do those things, my HRV average scores are lower than most people's. They're still at my good level. So I'm able to take that data and manipulate it for my body type. Mitochondria growth and endurance, lower growth. I found this one kind of comical because mitochondria tends to be like where your body can then create more cells for oxygen transportation, which is essentially what you need for cardiovascular work. So I have a lower growth. So for zone two and zone one cardio, I just need to do more than someone else to build that up. So I read this, it doesn't say I can't do that. It says, oh, I've got to work harder than someone else. That's all that means. But I'm also a little bit more prone to soft tissue injuries. So if I want to increase my cardiovascular training, plyometrics are probably not going to be my best friend. Weighted stuff's probably not going to be my best friend. Impact, so track workouts, running on cement, not my best friend. So what do I do? I do rower. I do a C2 bike. I use a ski erg. Those things are so easy on the body that I can bang out 45 minutes of that type of stuff, still get heart rate elevated, train my cardiovascular system, but not actually beat up the joints compared to other things. So yeah, these gene testing was kind of cool for me. It showed some stuff that I'm good at, some stuff I'm not good at, but this is a starting point for you that you can manipulate as we go through. Yeah, you're right. I'm not a cardio king, but I will probably just try harder than most people you know. And I feel like dying sometimes 5 minutes into a 60-minute session doesn't mean I'll stop. And I think this can be trained so much different. And TK, you saw when he came down to our camp, he went to a whole nother level of training he's never been to before. And that was just a bunch of guys motivating him and telling me safe with certain exercises we may have felt scared or unsafe. Then all of a sudden the body can do different things. So with hypertrophy and with growth, it's the same thing. And if you think you can't do another rep, try it. What's the worst thing that could happen? Can't do another rep, right? But if you ever actually done a set where you're like, hey, try and do another rep, ask yourself, can I do one more rep? If the answer is yes, do it. Can I do one more rep? If the answer is yes, do it. Next thing you know it, you're supposed to do a set of 6 to 8, and all of a sudden you do a set of 20. Then all of a sudden you're like, oh, maybe I have more ability than I think. Yeah. Yeah, so for growth, talking about a hard gainer, intensity is the first thing that I look at. Okay. And gaining muscle, if you can contract a muscle, you can grow muscle. Everybody can. Some people can just do it at an easier pace than other people, but everyone can do it. It's the same thing with learning. Back when you were in school, you may have been told, oh, you're doing great, you're smart, you pick things up real quick. You may have been told, okay, you know what, you don't try that hard, you need to try a little bit harder, and I think you're going to be good. But you just got to put a little bit more effort in. That's the same with muscular growth. Some people got to try harder, some people don't have to try as hard. But if you can contract a muscle, you can grow a muscle. That is for everyone and everything on the planet. Now, when talking about food and eating above it for the muscles to recover, food also allows you to get more out of your workouts. So we use carbohydrates and we use fats to contract muscle. And in extreme situations, we can use protein. Now, in order of importance or who's going to give you the most, it's going to be your carbohydrates, carbs first. When you're trying to get a good pump on, carbs are going to be fueling that energy system all the way. When you break down carbohydrates, your body converts into glucose. Glucose goes into the muscular cell. The cell then utilizes that to contract. That's what happens. Your body can use fat. However, you're not going to be able to use fat to get to that extreme level of hypertrophy that you could with carbohydrate. Carbohydrates are just faster, it's just easier. However, some people are very metabolically flexible. Someone who's very metabolically flexible, they can choose carbohydrates or fat for energy most of the time. The average person can't. When we're unhealthy, we really can't use fat for energy. This is where you might have been a little bit, at one point in your life, maybe been a bit overweight. You get on the treadmill, you're barely walking, and then all of a sudden your heart rate says you're at 160. You're like, how am I at 160? And you look on the heart rate zone and says, oh, I'm in the cardio zone, not in the fat burning zone. I want to get in that fat burning zone. So you slow the treadmill down to half a mile an hour, and you're walking like this, and all of a sudden your heart rate is now down to 65%, it's 110. You're like, oh, now I'm burning fat. No, someone who would be so metabolically unhealthy, their body can't really be using fat there. They're gonna have to deplete all the glycogen first, which are carbohydrates, before they start using fat for energy. So someone's morbidly obese or is really out of shape, still train hard, burn off that glycogen first, then your body can use stored fat for energy second. So when you're really metabolically flexible, you can use either or. But carbohydrates are gonna allow you to get more of a pump and can allow you to do one or two more repetitions within a set. So if you're trying to put on muscle and you're eating carbohydrates, you're gonna get more out of your training, which will allow you to go to those intensities, which will allow the muscle tissue to break down more, which will cause more of a pump, which will cause more muscle soreness, which will then require more calories from carbs, fats, proteins. So your carbohydrate is going to be kind of your number one. Fat can aid in hypertrophy because fat also has an anti-inflammatory effect on the body. If you're looking at linoleic acid fats, EPA fats, those are ones. Some polyunsaturated fatty acids, your PUFAs, some of them can do that. Extra virgin olive oil is a great fat to have, but it has the anti-inflammatory effect. So if you get a lot of inflammation, and too much inflammation causes cortisol to go up, too much cortisol, that's catabolic. So if you're training really hard, you cause internal inflammation from training. You take fish oils, omega fish oils, that brings down some inflammation, that amplifies the recovery. So fats are also going to be important from a nutritional perspective. And protein is always going to be able to signal muscular growth. You get an anabolic effect from eating protein. Animal protein is going to be superior to plant protein due to the amount of availability of amino acids. Amino acids are in higher numbers from animal protein than they are from plant protein. There are some people out there who eat strictly plant protein and have phenomenal physiques. They are the people who are just a little bit more genetically gifted. And they can do that. There is some plant-based bodybuilders out there who compete. They don't win though. So that's just my observation, because I've had conversations with people before. They're like, well, it's plant-based protein bodybuilders. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, what place? They ain't top 10. They ain't at the Olympia, right? So you still can, but sometimes success leaves clues and you don't see them at the highest level. Doesn't mean it can't happen. I'm just saying I haven't seen it yet. So that's where the protein ends up being so important for muscular recovery and for muscular growth. So we need to have the protein. In extreme cases, you can also convert protein into sugar. It's called gluconeogenesis. So that's kind of the way I eat. and kind of the way I train, my body uses a lot of protein, converts it into energy for the cardiovascular work and the stuff that I do. But if my goal was to increase my body mass by, say, 5 to 7 kilos of pure muscle, I would incorporate a lot more carbohydrates, even though I got the fatso gene. I wouldn't be able to go too much because my body will put on fat quite easy. Unfortunately, damn you, mom and dad. But it is what it is. Can a hard gainer train fasted? Yeah, absolutely. A hard gainer can train fasted. You can still get the stimulus for growth training fasted, but I would always do a test and a retest. Very simple. Train fasted, your hardest workout of the week. And then the following week, do the exact same workout again and eat beforehand. And let's look at performance. Which one do you perform better? If you say there's no difference, okay, there's no difference, you can pick and choose. If you say I felt tired and sluggish when I ate, then I trained, say it was lower body, then I trained my legs, and you didn't have as good of a session, so I'd say train fasted. You said, wow, actually, I got a few more reps. I lifted a little bit more weight. I got a little bit more pump. And guess what? As a hard gainer, you still need to eat if you want to maximize what you can do. Everybody can gain muscle if they can stimulate a muscle, but all these little things end up kind of turning it a little bit more or amplifying it up. But you just got to do trial and error, test and retest when it comes to that. Salt is also a big component of muscular pumps. So if you're not using any sodium right now before a workout, I highly suggest everyone does that. And like Robert, you depleted your body, then you carb loaded, you're probably salt loaded too, right? Yeah, added that salt, that water, that carbohydrate, and all of a sudden the muscles, like a dry sponge, they suck it all up. Same thing for when it comes to, general training. Add salt before you go and work out, and you can get a good pump on that as well, as long as you're not hypertensive or there's no negative effects from it. But if you sweat a lot, you need a lot of salt. If your salt levels in your body went to zero, you're dead. Salt is not bad if we need salt to live. It's just one of those minerals. So to grow muscle, we're always going to need a stimulus. We're going to need some form of recovery. We're going to need some form of nutrition and a surplus. We can only train as hard as we recover. That's where the sleep comes into play. Supplementation is going to amplify a lot of this as well. You can contract a muscle. You can grow a muscle. Sustainability, how do you keep this going? How long do you want it to go? However long you want it to go, slowly, you got to keep doing more. You got to do more, you got to do more, you got to do more. What does more look like? More food, more training, more volume, more time in the gym. If you look at a first-time exercise in the gym and they're trying to put on a little bit of muscle, they can get away with usually doing 3 1-hour sessions a week at intensity that's challenging for them. If you look at a pro bodybuilder and you said, listen, I'm going to change your training program around, Ben. And I know you were doing 2-a-days, 3 days a week, and you were doing 2 1-days, 2 days a week, and you were resting 2 1-days. We're going to cut all that down to 3 1-hour sessions a week, and we're going to get you to 335 pounds. Wouldn't happen. It's not enough stimulus to cause that growth. It wouldn't happen. So as you get to a point where you're growing muscle and you're plateauing and you want to grow more, you have to do more. The pros are spending for sure, 8 to 12 hours a week in the gym doing solid resistance training. That's a no-brainer. And Ben talks about, some of his 3-hour workouts straight through as a standard, or 2-a-days as a standard. In the morning, doing 2 muscle groups, in the evening, doing 2 muscle groups. Add up the math there. That's 3 hours a day to 4 hours a day of training. But when you're 330 pounds and you're at the Olympia level, that's kind of what's needed, So that's how you would keep going, but then how do you sustain? Sustain is you do what you were doing to get where you were. You reduce a little bit. Could be training frequency, could be the total volume that you're doing, could be reducing the calories a little bit. Then you got to monitor it. Let's say we all here want to get to 200 pounds. 200 pounds is the goal, and we want to be about 13% body fat. 200 pounds, 13% body fat. You look good with a shirt on, you look good with a shirt off. You look good. That's a good looking physique. You do the training, you get to that point there. You're like, hey, I'm good. 200 pounds. That's my max. I don't want to be 201. What do I do now? Well, you could reduce some time in the gym or reduce some calories. If you reduce both at the exact same time, you'll see a quick drop in your body weight. Too much too soon. Reduce one. And then monitor. Look at the scale, look at the photos. Look at the scale, look at the photos. If you start declining, then you need to increase more of something. You can try by increasing the calories, keep in training, test. Go a week, take a look and see what happens. If things go down, oh, they're still going down. Okay, flip it. Increase the training, keep the calories a little bit lower. See what happens. Okay, if I increase the training, I eat a little bit less, I can maintain 200, then that's how you would sustain it. If neither, then you have to do what got you to 200 and you have to maintain that. And if you're comfortable doing that with your day to day, no problem. If it's not worth it for you, then you just don't do it. But that's how you would sustain it. You got to figure out the amount of training and the amount of food with a test and a retest. That's all. So we now know how to gain muscle. And we now know how to sustain muscle as well. So I'll open up the last 7 to 10 minutes here for any questions or comments you guys would like to leave.
Just a comment. Thanks. That's been super useful. I've gone from the past where I've lost body weight before, but I think there was a comment in there about skinny fat, and that's like I can put on weight real easy. If that's what if it's the fudge gene that means you never have to stop eating, that's me. And I've always this has been my first time really trying to dial in a slow sort of systematic lean gain, keeping track to make sure I'm not putting on too much weight too quickly. It sort of just sneaks up on me where I look in a few years' time and go, damn, I got fat again. Like, how did that happen? Because it's just so.
Mine's very simple. It is carbohydrates. So when I consume 100 to 150 grams of carbohydrates, I joke with my wife. I'm like, tomorrow you're waking up with a not so sexy husband. Like, you can visually see the difference in my body with the carbohydrates. And obviously processed carbs, I react more negatively than unprocessed carbohydrates. So if I'm using fruits with like a high fiber content, like berries, I can look good the next day. If I have the same amount of carbohydrates in the form of ice cream, I look shittier the next. I look softer the next day. Like my down south trips on the Monday to the Friday are they should be studied. I can look like a whole nother human being. It's wild, but I do know that if I have carbohydrates, there's certain ones I react more negatively to, and that just comes with trial and error, fellas. And you can curate your own nutrition by just kind of writing stuff down, look in the mirror, track your performance, and once you've done it a few times, you know your things, you know your triggers, right? So Robert, I'm sure you have an idea already of, skinny fat days. Oh, I would eat like this. Maybe you changed how you were eating, or maybe you changed the stimulus of your training, and it wasn't as a negative effect. Am I right?
Yeah, totally. And for me, it was probably I find the deficit easier because it's strict. Like I find it go just be hungry and just accept the fact like hungry is good. Cool. I'm hungry. That's what I'm supposed to be. No, I just can't eat anything. I'm like a once you pop, you can't stop. So like if I just don't eat anything, I'm okay. It's like I'd struggle with like oh a little bit of carbs, and then my body just goes oh I just give me more of that. And I struggle not to binge.
Yeah, you're not alone, my friend. Jeff, do you have any comments or questions?
I mean, I think that makes sense. Having gone through phases where like I would train, but I probably wasn't eating enough. And so like I would either maintain or even kind of lose weight, even if I thought for a while I would gain strength, and then that would kind of plateau. And I'd kind of yo-yo through phases kind of like that. So.
That's the worst. Like, if you think about it, when you train really hard, what happens? You hurt, you're sore, you're like tired the next day. When I deadlift, I can't have conversations the next day at the same rate. Like, you put all that into it, and then all of a sudden you're like, ah, fuck, I only ate 2,000 calories, right? And it's like you don't get the benefit. And if you're a fatso at heart like myself, and it's like I train really hard, and it's now time to eat big. And I didn't even do that. And I love eating. It's like, ah, oh, idiot. Yeah. So I'm glad that you see that now. Yeah. Stimulus first, and then you gotta follow up with the food afterwards. And that's for some of you guys here. If you're in this phase right now and you're putting on muscle, you're trying to put on muscle, maybe the eating of the food can be difficult. You don't have the fudge gene, right? You don't have that buffet gene. Some things that you can do, I should have actually talked about this a little bit earlier. I would chew my food first and then drink my food second. So my breakfast would look like, okay, if I'm going to have like a 7-8 egg omelet and I'm going to have a couple pieces of toast with a nut butter on it, I can chew all that. Then I would follow it up with a protein smoothie because I can drink that. So how you take the food is different. I would take ground meat over whole meats, trying to get more calories in. You can take ground chicken, ground turkey, ground beef. It's so much easier to consume than like a steak or a chicken breast. I've never done this, but I know of a well-known power lifter. He used to take what's called chicken shakes. So he'd take chicken breasts, put them in a blender with water, some spinach, a couple other things in there. He'd blend them up and he'd bring them to work with them. When he wouldn't have time to eat, he would just drink his chicken shakes. I don't know if it's good or not. If anyone here wants to try it, let me know. But drinking your calories after you've eaten them is an easy way to get more calories in. Okay, what am I hearing here? Thoughts on essential amino acids preserve muscle while strict with calories while hungry? Yeah, it works. It does work using amino acids. You just have to make sure that the ones that you're having are high in quality. If they taste really good and they're flavored and stuff like that, and it's kind of like a juice, maybe just look on the side, look at something else. And good to have after a meal too. Have a meal and then have those afterwards. Drinking water towards the end of a meal, that can aid in digestion. If you want to cut weight, I always say jack up your water because it can also make you feel a little bit more satiated or full. That just expands the volume. If you want to gain weight and you're having digestive issues, make the food a little bit softer. But if you're really trying to gain muscle mass and you're struggling with eating all the food, I wouldn't suggest drinking a bunch of water.
That was the opposite when I was in the like I don't have that off switch, so I catch myself when I still felt hungry and go I and I have sort of like half a liter of water and go now just sit for like 20 minutes and the water would make me feel full and it'd give time for a bit of digestion to kick in and then I'd go okay I didn't need to eat more because without that I just eat till I don't feel full and that's never.
Cutting weight, one of the things I tell all the guys that I coach when we're trying to cut is carbonated drinks. Because carbonated drinks will expand the volume of the stomach and give you that more of a bloat-like feeling with no actual calories. So you take that in and you're like, oh, I feel like I've eaten something when I really didn't, you know? But water and then carbonated amplifies it up a little bit more too. Baggie of eggs. Is that just a bag of eggs? Oh, okay. But just like, so I've eaten raw eggs before because it's actually quite easy. I had a guy, I ran a podcast a few years ago, and I had a guy on there, Raw Meat Experiment was his social handle. And I just said to him, so you want to come on my podcast? I want to have a conversation with you because he ate everything raw. He ate raw chicken, raw beef, raw eggs. And he gets on and he says, hey, we're going to do some slonkers. So what's a slonker? He goes, it's a raw egg shot. So, okay. So we're on a podcast and I did a couple of them and I was like, man, this actually ain't too bad. And I'm like, am I gonna get sick? He's like, I don't know. He goes, I don't get sick. And I'm like, okay. So I started trying it and I found it was so easy to finish a meal and then take four eggs and just chug them. And once you've done it a couple of times, it's quite easy. And all of a sudden you can like get your caloric load up by just having like raw eggs because you're just swallowing it. Anyway, if anyone gets poisoned from that, you didn't hear that from me. Like Rocky. Like Rocky Balboa. Okay, fellas, it's 7 o'clock. I got to take my kid to karate right now. I hope that was informative for you. And if so, awesome. And if not, my apologies. I'll be back again at the start of next month with another topic. Summertime, crush your hypertrophy goals. Keep eating your foods. If you're struggling with getting the food in and stuff, shoot your coach a message. Shoot me a message on Muscle Intelligence Group. I got a few other tips and tricks. And when you don't have the fudge gene, of how can you eat a little bit more food? So don't hesitate to reach out, boys. Have a great day, have a great night, and I'll see you next month.